Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This hour is brought to you by Busey Bank.
James Fegan.
Yes, James.
James Fegan's got some branding on his laptop, making sure everybody knows that he's joined The Athletic.
Can never get too much exposure.
On Twitter at JR Fegan.
I can anticipate this question is probably way too early, but
excellent. Too soon. Too soon.
Asking the questions to get the answers you need.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendrick?
If I'd known that, I didn't know that. I'd check the rule. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
James Fegan with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
James Fegan is always available to talk White Sox with us, and here he is on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. So three games clear of 500 for the first time since like the second week of the season, but boy, did they beat a terrible team to do it.
Everything's fixed.
What was valuable, James, if anything, from the three games over the Tigers?
Winning three games, I guess. Since at this point in the schedule, it's pure desperation to just accumulate as many victories as possible. So you can't really quibble with actually getting it done, especially not with the way this year has gone at this point. They added late runs. They hit home runs a bit more frequently than they needed it late to kind of pad leads and maybe not make every game a one-run pressure cooker the way it was when they were three games over 500 in April and thus wearing out their bullpen in a completely unsustainable way that hit the rocks in June. So that was a little bit better. Andrew Vaughn obviously carried a lot of the load without Luis Robert. You can see a vision of them getting by without Tim Anderson some way. AJ Pollock looking a little bit like the guy they thought they acquired in April, but yeah, I don't think we're at the point in the year anymore where we think about like this team's going to structurally change and be an offensive juggernaut from here on out and everything's going to be okay. I think you're dealing with what you have a little bit and hoping it pekes out in a playoff berth at some point.
That being said, the development of Andrew Vaughn has continued, and I think that the White Sox should look at it as a victory both in the scouting and in the development of him as a hitter. What's been important about how Vaughn has gone about getting to become this type of hitter?
I think it's sort of maybe the multi-situational bat that you've been looking for, that it's not someone who kind of succeeds in one way, that he's someone who can kind of hit for average and do the, you know, hit the other way thing, but also has the ability to kind of like turn and tap into pull power when necessary. Kind of the flexibility to work counts and not just work of, you know, they're being hyper aggressive and it's working, or, you know, they're hitting for power and that's the only way they generate offense. You know, obviously I think at this point in the season would be thrilled to see a team that would just like was boom and bust with home runs because that would show some potential for them to do it. But Vaughn's kind of that versatile multi-tool hitter, succeeds in multiple ways that they haven't really replicated from Jose Abreu over the last, you know, decade as much as we thought. When Jose Abreu resigned, like, you know, he'd be redundant by the end of his run. He's kind of as needed as ever because they haven't produced as many kind of Andrew Vaughns in his stead to kind of take his place.
Yeah, but Andrew Vaughn's value, once you finally can get him to first base, is going to skyrocket because the guy's got a WRC plus of 136 and he's only worth one war.
And that's because the defense drags him down so much. You know, it, whenever it is, first base or DH for him is just going to, is really going to be an important value elevator.
Yeah, for sure. I meant that more in terms of, I don't think you've gotten the consistency from, like, say, Eloy Jimenez to say, like, well, we're going to plug him for DH, we're going to get 150 games of production or something like that, or Gavin Sheets in the same way, or just the kind of cornerbacks all around the roster other than Vaughn to say, like, well, we can, and Jose Abreu can retire, or Jose Abreu can leave, and we'll, our offense will recover. I don't think you've got that level of consistency. Obviously, not giving away 15 runs on defense from Andrew Vaughn is a good way for him to be an all-star player and not a someone who's scraping to get be a two-win player by the end of the season.
What's the latest on Luis Robert?
He's avoiding the IL, which obviously is a big thing, but also with the way the season's gone, maybe it just leads more confusion. But, you know, when they initially came out and said it was a wrist sprain, that's a little bit more concerning. It sounds like something that needs to be rested and rehabbed and whatnot, and a season that doesn't have much time left for it. But at this point, they're treating him like he could play in the Houston series, which is encouraging. Yeah, I don't think with Tim Anderson out that you can really spare anything more from this offense on a consistent basis and hope to, you know, make a dent in the Astros pitching staff. So the idea that he could play this week is certainly something they need for a team that really can't afford anything more taken from them.
What's the significance to the Sox of the Guardians taking over now as the team to catch in the division?
In terms of, like, what is a statement about a team that's kind of max effort all the time, squeezing out a possible division-winning season from a very mid-level roster, reflect upon them, or is it for them to chase?
Well, that was a kind of an answer to my question and the question that you asked. And if that's part of it, yes. I'm wondering from a perspective of not just what does it say about the White Sox, but what does it mean to their own chase? How does this now, if you look at the schedules or if you look at who's got whom, how does it being the Guardians and not the Twins at this point and so quickly, in the blink of an eye, it became the Guardians. How does this affect their opportunity?
I don't think it's good because I think we've seen them, you know, beat the stuffings out of the Twins the way the Twins' kind of fatal flaws of their lack of bullpen and lack of starting pitching and just the inability to pitch in general. It can be exposed, whereas the Guardians seem like a matchup nightmare for the White Sox, where you don't, not that it sets up in the same way, but, you know, they have a big series, you know, next weekend against the Guardians, you'll be an opportunity to make up ground. I don't think they're a team they match up very well against. It's a high contact offense against a White Sox team that doesn't defend very well. They, you know, for them to succeed, they want to be able to have their starter rack up 10 strikeouts and not really put a lot of stress on their defensive coordinators. It's a team that likes to run a lot against a team that can't really stop the running game. It's a, it's a pitching staff that they even seem to struggle a bit with a little bit. So I really don't think I think if you're the White Sox and you're down two games to the Twins and you got 5-6 games against them down the stretch, you kind of lift your chops a little bit. Maybe not lift your chops, but you feel good about that matchup. You feel good if you play well, you can beat this team. They're exploitable. Whereas the Guardians are kind of a matchup nightmare that goes beyond maybe their talent level. I don't think they're necessarily a better team. It's over 162 than the White Sox, but making ground with them via head-to-head matchups is not the same. That's the same opportunity that it is against the Twins.
Before I ask James the next question, I'm going to quiz you, Dan. I'm going to give you a slash line. Mm-hmm. You tell me who this player is, okay? Second half of the season, slash line on this player. 303, 382, 546. OPS of 927, OPS plus of 158.
Aloy.
AJ Pollock.
Same thing I did with James last time. Yeah, that's the.
I was not going to get tricked into not guessing Pollock again. Not after last week.
No. Well, that's why I didn't put it to you.
I thought it had to be somebody else.
I wanted to put it to Dan. So AJ Pollock in the second half, and particularly in August, has been really good. Why?
He's a good player, and up should not be down for 6 months. Like the whole thing of just. He's coming off of one of his best years. He's coming off of two straight years of being a really consistent player. He's basically had one below average offensive season in his career, and it's, you know, largely just him being hurt. So, yeah, he's, you know, 34 and things can erode rapidly, but the idea that he was just going to be, you know, a 70 OPS plus guy for 6 months just really never scanned. I get that maybe the Dodgers have more levels of preparation for their offense than the White Sox, but just totally falling off a cliff. He was bound to hit to some degree at some point.
And now we're seeing it. And it's been good. Do you think that they would – I mean, I know we're still at least 5 weeks away from this, but would they leave Pollock up top even when T.A.'s back?
I don't think so. Just like even debating the merits of it, I just don't think it's a move Tony would ever make. I think Tony is very rooted in the idea of like identities for his players, and he has Tim Anderson as our igniter, our leadoff hitter, and I think he would stick with that. Now, does that lead to maybe more idea of Pollock hitting second when Luis Robert, could always be a middle of the order guy who hits for power, and Yoan Moncada hasn't really been, super consistent in that sort of way, or Yasmani Grandal hasn't kind of been the on base guy you'd want either, and seems to be maybe a step slower. I think that could happen. I think that role's a little bit malleable. I don't think Tony's going to pivot that hard from Tim Anderson leadoff man.
How do you see the Astros approaching Johnny Cueto?
I think generally probably looking to be aggressive at him early in the count, just knowing that he's going to be in the zone and going to be aggressive and going to kind of throw pitches he wants to get swings at. I think you're going to get strikes and you don't really want to fall behind and allow him to work against you in a major way. So I think we'll see early swings and, maybe they can, given how much power they've had, he can be vulnerable to the home run ball, that they would kind of jump on his efforts to get ahead. But I also think, Johnny's crafty enough to anticipate that to some degree and can definitely exploit aggressive teams when he wants to. So it's kind of strength versus strength as far as I can tell. But we'll see. It's hard for me to predict what's going to happen in a Cueto start in any given night because he just switches his pattern so much. And also you're talking about whether a guy who doesn't really have great stuff can beat one of the best lineups in baseball. It's a weird thing to ponder.
Forget about record for a second when comparing these two teams. What is it that the Astros do well that the White Sox don't?
How long you got?
I mean,
the defense certainly stood out in the playoff series, but I think the main thing, and this is a weird, detour to make, but like, I think what's frustrating about watching them play the Royals is that the Royals are probably one of the worst teams in baseball at controlling the strike zone. Their pitchers walk guys. Their batters don't take walks. You can exploit them. You can get their starters out of the game by, racking up the pitch count and, taking the free base runners. Because the White Sox are not good at doing that, they don't have these advantageous situations with the Royals that they should have, that every other team kind of seems to be better at getting into. The Astros are elite at controlling the zone. They are elite at working counts and getting on base and not giving you extra base runners and making you hit four singles in an inning when you're a team that's already prone to do that like the White Sox. So it's kind of the flip of that. As a result, it's not like there's this big weakness that they're failing to exploit with the Astros. So they tend to play them all right, or at least I thought they played them pretty well in Houston. But at the same time, it's hard to beat a team that's elite at controlling the zone on both sides of baseball.
Did I see Ronaldo Lopez approaching 100 miles an hour, or did I dream that?
He threw a pitch 99.9 miles an hour when he was with the Washington Nationals the year before they traded him. So it's always been in him. But, the mechanical efficiency has been there. I want to say that I StatCast searched this early in the year, and his, maybe 10 hardest pitches of his career have all been thrown this season, and it's probably up to 15 or 20 now. But ever since he's been healthy, ever since he's kind of shortened the arm action, he's become more efficient. Now, apparently, he's a walking testimony to the value of chiropractors, which I did not anticipate becoming an angle of the White Sox training staff this year. But he looks like he's been pretty good since working on his back issue as well.
Yeah, his advanced numbers are really pretty amazing. And I don't know where he is contractually, but he's the second most valuable pitcher on the White Sox by a mile.
He is next year is his last arbitration eligible season.
So what do you do with him? When he looks at it from the business perspective, James, of starters get paid, closers get paid, this role that I'm in, I might be able to cobble together a couple of really nice paydays, but it isn't the same. How does he maybe approach them about, is there a rotation spot that I can try and earn next year? Or does he look at it long-term and say, I could pitch in this role in Major League Baseball for a decade?
Having recently talked to him about it, he said that he's always thinking about returning to be a starter. And I think that's true for a lot of young relievers, but especially for him. he feels like he has the arsenal that he never had as a starter. He said that he feels like his slider is better than it ever was when he was trying to make it work in the rotation, and that his delivery is more repeatable, so he could, you know, bring back out his changeup or his curveball if he needed to a longer outing. So I think he'd be pursuing some opportunity. He's certainly young enough where he could still dream on that in some way. And I think from the White Sox perspective, he's obviously very good and very essential to your bullpen. And, you know, somehow despite paying for relievers constantly, you're always looking for new relievers every year. But you have to have some consideration if another team out there is valuing him as a starter and wants to pay you like he's a, you know, mid-rotation starter in a trade. That should be something you consider, because theoretically it's more valuable than the relievers, as painful as it is to say and as essentially is right now.
Defensively, Yoán Moncada is had like spectacular moments, and he had a bunch of them this past weekend. Offensively, there's still a struggle. What have they said about where he's at offensively and what's not quite right with him?
They say he basically, it's funny because after he signed that extension in spring training 2020, you know, Rick Hahn was all about, you know, we think there's a next level of Yoán Moncada from the guy who was basically junked his like passive approach and was just very aggressive in 2019, didn't take walks, but hit the ball over the yard, and the guy who had the elite batter's eye. They thought they could basically add a 12% walk rate to that guy in 2019. This point, they're like, man, we need to get him back to 2019. You know, forget walks, forget all the patience. Let's just get back to that guy if we can. Let's get this guy back to being aggressive on fastballs in the zone, and, you know, kind of abandon that search for this player that we haven't really seen before. Let's at least get back to the guy we have seen before. So they think aggression and getting back out of this passive mode that he's seen at times, or you see a bit more of the taking strike threes and hittable locations that, you know, kind of marred 2018. They're trying to get that out, because 2019, Yoán Moncada is the best Yoán Moncada we've ever seen, and I think we'd all take that at this point.
James Feegan, thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
James Feegan on the White Sox right here on the Bernstein and Holmes Show.
The Reynaldo Lopez thing is really interesting to me.
Yeah, look at it. Look at his velocities. Look at the spin rate. Look at everything ticking upward.
And Layla told us that when she had her conversation with Johnny Cueto, that's one of the things that he had talked about. And Reynaldo Lopez has kind of attached himself to Johnny Cueto and is using some of the Johnny Cueto method to have his best year as a pitcher.
The Johnny Cueto method was my least favorite acid jazz group.
They're pretty good. Their second album, I thought. First album, not so much for me. But the second album,
a little more experimental.
Thought it was strong.
And pushing some boundaries a bit. Yeah, playing with time signatures.
You could tell that they just said, screw it.
Yeah.
And they just kind of went for it on that album. First album, not so much. A little too commercial.
They reclaimed their artistic territory with the second.
Yeah, you know, the record company wanted them to kind of do one thing, and then they
screw
were like,
you, man.
We're not doing that.
No.
We're the Johnny Cueto method, and we're going to do it the way we want to do it.
They all wheel around at the same time.
They hesitate before they play. Mm-hmm. That's how they do it. Damn right. Working out.
More football talk when we come back. It's pretty incredible what is happening to the most important spot on the Bears' offensive line. That the Bears' actions are telling us something, and we should go out of our way to listen to them, I guess. That's next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The score.
And 670thescore.com. An Odyssey station.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Intruder alert. Intruder alert.
Skate or die.
The production team is on top of it today. Ray Diaz and Mike Rankin.
know that Skate or Die gave you a key change in there.
Check them out. They're doing all the hard work and the heavy lifting. And that was Brad Biggs. He was on with Mully and Haw. Does a great job. Has the best theme song on the score. We were noticing, and I noticed it. Like, I wrote it down.
It's kind of badass. This is.
Yeah, we should keep this synth.
This is urgent.
For something. I'm not sure what, but we need to keep this handy.
This is also the Johnny Cueto method, I believe.
Ah, that's what it is. Yeah. I wrote down on my notes in my list of Bears things, Braxton Jones being the player to watch with the starting O. And like as the game broadcast was going on, here's Adam Amin. He's like, yeah, our player to watch. And I was like, wait, what?
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
It's like, it's Braxton Jones? Like, that's the player to watch? Interesting.
And why would the broadcast have designated someone as a player to watch when these local preseason broadcasts are done in very tight partnership with the team?
Right. Like, it kind of struck me as being like, oh, they do think that Braxton Jones is ready for his close-up. Then, when you see Braxton Jones leave with the starters, quote-unquote, and him not out there, like my antenna were raised. So we talked with Big Ant Heron last hour. And without being prompted on Braxton Jones, he said this about Braxton Jones.
One thing just in 18 snaps that really stood out to me at left tackle, man, that Braxton Jones came out immediately. That was maybe the most shocking thing to me because I'm just assuming this rookie fifth round pick who apparently has worked his way into the potential to be a starter at left tackle. In the back of my mind this entire time, I thought, all right, when Tevin Jenkins gets healthy, they're going to make that a real battle. Or Larry Borum, he started a lot of games at either tackle last season, so maybe from a comfort perspective, they're going to look to go that direction. Obviously, they brought in fellow Hawkeye Riley Reiff. Maybe somebody else is going to get that shot. And the fact that, you know, and to be clear, he was facing the majority of the time another rookie. Now, George Karloftis is going to be a good pro. He was a first-round pick. He is also a rookie, so the majority of those snaps that we saw, and Braxton Jones looked impressive, really liked what I saw, so I do think there's some context to that. I was impressed. Just shows me the Bears even more impressed by the fact that when the starters came out, like Larry Borum stayed in the game. Braxton Jones didn't stay in the game. They are sold on him to be the guy to protect the blind side of Justin Fields for this coming season. So I think that's very telling. Who knows what the full context of that is behind closed doors? Is it because they think he's so spectacular? Is it because they believe that this is just going to be a developmental season anyway? So it's worth that risk for a guy who's shown some traits there that we'll just believe we can take a few lumps with him? It's probably some combination of those two things. So in that limited sample size, the thing that stood out to me most, man, they love Braxton Jones.
So I wonder a couple things there. What are they seeing of him against Robert Quinn in individual drills? And even if, and because Quinn is a pro's pro, and there are people who will tell you that even with all those other names, even with Watt and Garrett and anybody else you want to put on that list,
Bosa.
Chase Young, one of the Bosas and maybe Hutchinson soon, that nobody can get an angle. Nobody can come at you and keep speed running on the sides of his feet like Quinn. And if he's able to show in practice that is guy isn't by him every single time, or if that sort of performance can happen at full speed that's giving them that sort of faith, okay, then maybe everybody screwed up four times through.
Yeah, if you end up with a fifth-round pick being your starting left tackle.
It's so rare. It is so rare for a starting NFL left tackle to not be a first-round pick.
Now, the Bears have some history with this as a franchise, but not this particular regime. If you got that, and he's even if he's just okay, like let's not say
like
special.
Leno.
Yeah, he can play for a decade. That's a win. That's a scouting drafting win, if that's the case. I I would then also be a little bit disappointed that the competition that you've brought in can't unseat him. Then you go, that was a scouting fail on your part. That's a pro personnel scouting fail that you weren't able to bring in legitimate competition. But it might also mean that when the way that Poles looks at this is it's a developmental season for the entire roster. And if we think he's close enough, like if the difference is, like if he's even to Riley Reiff, then we'll err on the side of youth.
That's smart.
Instead of experience.
That's smart.
But maybe he was just flat out better. And if that's the case, that's good. That's good that you have a guy that's this young that didn't play in a big-time program. By the way, your guy's on TV.
Oh, shoot.
Big man's on TV.
Styling out, too. Look at those glasses Victor Wembanyama's got going on. That's going to be a very wealthy man.
Very soon, he's going to be super wow. wealthy. But if Braxton Jones is good enough to make it through an NFL season and not be a disaster, then you have to take that as a win.
When we return, my sports watching highlight of the weekend came late afternoon, early evening yesterday, and there's a lesson in this for all of us. What's next?
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
This is dangerously right.
That is on an aggressive line. That just hops along and wedges in between the grass and that stone wall.
I've never seen that before. Will Zalatoris on the 1-2-3rd playoff hole. It's a par 3 over water. And it hits on the brick and looks like it's about to flop back in the water, and it bounces on the rock. It bounces on the rock, and then it sticks in between the rock and the hard place. And twice in the playoffs, his new caddy had to stop him from being stupid. And this is why you have a good caddy. It's a new caddy for him, Joel Stock, because he'd gotten rid of Ryan Goebbels, who was a longtime guy, longtime friend. And this young man almost did two really, really stupid things. One time hitting from next to a fence and trying to go for the green over and around tree branches and through the forest. And his caddy's like, no, no, no. Chip it out. Live to fight another day. Same thing on this playoff hole. He could have tried to hit the ball from that confluence of the rocks and underneath the sod, and it would have. He had no prayer.
Kneel before sod.
And we're screaming at him, just take a drop, take a drop, take a drop. And he did, and Sepp Straka hit his in the water, and Zalatoris ends up winning his first PGA tournament. The lesson, discretion is the better part of valor. You don't have to play hero golf to win a tournament, and it was the right decision. It was the right reference, a right response. When his caddy was kind of like, "Look, let's here are the odds of this being good."
And this guy's also going to hit it into the water.
Well, he didn't even know that at that point. But being able to look at and weigh the options and decide what was right, I feel good for Will Zalatoris because he was real excited to make that first putt when he knew at a minimum he was going to be in a playoff after regulation. What are they going to talk about now? Now that he fixed his putting stroke. And that's the lesson for all of us. You don't have to be a hero. Play for score. Put it out there. Give yourself a next shot. But congratulations to him. We'll never see that again. What did you say? It was like a golden tee?
Yeah, it felt like a shot that you would make on golden tee, where you're like, oh, I'm going to rip this one. And then you rip and you're like, hey, that ball is bouncing off that rock all weird. And it landed in a weird spot where like the you're in the rock.
Yes.
Like where your player
where your stance is like floating out somewhere. Yeah.
And you have to like, that's what it felt like when I was watching. Like, that's a golden tee shot. It's never not relevant. The Johnny Cueto method.
It's fun to picture someone actually playing this fast. Or like on a keytar.
You can picture Parkins and Spiegel trying to play that next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.